Dumelang Tobela, hello and welcome to this week's news wrap brought to you by the SL Cabinet. I am your host today, Gwena Mashale, joined by my colleagues Herman Molloy and Nandi Ntini. Guys, say hello for the listeners.
Hello.
We are the youth of today, bringing you all things new and current affairs through our eyes. I hope you stick with us as we look at the week's biggest stories, talk about the controversies and laugh about the weird ones. Let's get comfortable and dive right in. So this week, a fire broke out at a Midrand residential complex, leaving hundreds of people homeless and one woman dead. So it's believed that the fire was started at the apartment where this couple was allegedly heard fighting a few days earlier. So the Johannesburg Emergency Management Service said that the body of a 33-year-old woman was found under the collapsed ceiling, and Herman was on the ground. Herman, can you please just give us a bit of context of what happened on that particular day?
So the fire started on Tuesday night around 8 p.m. So they don't know what is the cause of the fire at this point. But then it seems like the information that the EMS has received is that the fire where it started, it's where the deceased was found. So obviously we went there just to hear their story and get clarity on what happened. And then when we got there, we spoke to three residents telling us their experience, horrific experience. And then they also mentioned that actually where the fire started, it's where few days back we heard a couple fighting. And then after that, we didn't see them over the weekend. And then we were surprised to say to learn that there's fire coming from their apartment. So this guy who rescued people's life, says he was busy on airports talking to his girlfriend. What a wonderful time you're having. And then you see a smoke coming into your room. And then when you realize, no, the smoke is coming from this house. And but he didn't think about it at the time. But it was that thing, you know, there's no one inside the house. Because every time when they are inside the house, I will hear because they go out and smoke. So when they open the door, I could hear, like, literally, like he says, these people smoke almost every 30 minutes. But over the weekend, he heard nothing. Okay, sharp. So he's saying that when they tried to enter and see what's happening, the smoke was too much. They couldn't. So when he was going to fetch the fire extinguisher, he realized, oh, no, man, it's not just the smoke. There's fire. Okay. That's when he started to knock everyone's room to say, hey, Joe, get out, get out, get out. That's how he managed to save lives. What a hero. And then he's saying that after that, a drone was flown by EMS, and they said nobody was inside the building. Okay, sharp. And then as we were about to leave on Wednesday, because I was on the scene on Wednesday, we received a statement from EMS to say, actually, we have discovered a body.
And I understand now that the police have opened an inquest.
Investigate what happened. So the story is very, very traumatizing. It's very horrific because even, I'm not saying that this is, it's not a story that is strong enough, but then you have people who, a lady I spoke to, she said that I had two nephews who came over for the weekend. And they just wanted to experience the city of gold. Now their experience has turned sour because they had to jump through the window.
I think everything happened so fast, man. Everything happened so quick. I was in bed chilling because we were from the mall, me and my nephews. So because I was exhausted, I just wanted to nap. So as I was chilling in bed, I heard some commotion outside. And then I thought maybe it was a movie that they were watching, you know. So I just kept chilling in bed. And then just after a few minutes, I started to look outside. And as I was looking outside, I started seeing smoke. So I thought maybe something was burning, but outside. But as soon as I went back in, and then around the passage I looked, and then I saw all my neighbors were out. So I was asking, what's happening? And then all of a sudden the place was starting to be filled with smoke. So at that point I had to think, okay, the distance from my place to the exit is way too long. There's no way I'm gonna run to the exit with my nephews. So we had to just jump off the windows, because that was the only solution, and thank God they don't have butlers. So we had to jump off. The only thing I managed to save is my work laptop. So yeah, that's the only thing I took with me. And yeah, I've been out here since last night, because I think I have that 2% of hope that maybe after the fire's been, you know, put down, they might allow us to go in and just check maybe what we can recover. Maybe there's something that I can take with me, some clothes, some shoes. But yeah, we've been kept here for way too long. So I feel like, yeah, at this point, I can't be blaming anyone, but we stood here and just watched as one unit was burning. And then after a few minutes, the whole place was on fire.
And think about it, we as African, if anything had happened to those two nephews, who was going to take the fall?
Yeah.
And what's funny is that in situations like this, you look at it when a fire happens. You tend to look at it and say, where was the owner of the building?
Exactly.
You know? And I understand that, because my imagining of the situation is, it's not like the owner of the building is the one that started the fire.
Yes.
But you expect the owner of the building to take some sort of accountability. Yeah. I mean, I was speaking to the MEC Chwako. I understand he was also on the scene on Wednesday.
Yes,
and I was speaking to him, and he says that they are trying very hard to find the owner of And they have not found the owner. They found the company, but they're not finding the actual owner. And it's a struggle, because they want him to basically answer to, apparently there was just a few building health, safety and compliances that were a little bit confusing. Because Chaku said, I think on Wednesday, that the building was turned into
They want accountability in terms of that, because this used to be offices.
Is, yes.
So it was turned to residential. That's, they want to say, okay, sharp, we are not there yet to blame you. But show us the steps you took from point A to point B.
Yeah. You actually took the proper steps.
Yeah.
But again, I feel like we're blaming the wrong person. You understand? So
it's not his fault.
It's not the building's owner's fault, because there are a lot of buildings within the CBD themselves that have been turned from offices into residential homes. I mean, I live in one that was once an office building and was turned into a residential home. And I understand that there are some certain ramifications or some certain ways that it's supposed to be gone through. And Chaku says that the building owner did apply for the conversion, but they're now obviously just waiting for the proper documents to verify that. But at the end of the day, I think there's also there's an elephant in the room that we need to really, really look at. First of all, apparently there's a baby involved.
Yes. Yeah. And where's the baby?
According to the story that Ubuntu wrote today, the family is not blaming the guy. And they're saying that the boat was not banned. And they are saying it seems like the lady was trying to escape
the fire.
Yeah. So it becomes hectic now to say what really happened.
It's complicated.
It is now challenging. I have not read the full story that we published today, but yeah, I got a gist of what was happening before. They say the sister was aware who the building was on fire, and then she went there, and then when she got there, she kept on saying, because we also were not allowed to get in. So she tried to say, no, but I have someone
who lives
And then she's saying on her mind, she was like, no, she's fine. Maybe she went to a hospital. That's why we can't reach her. Maybe. And then, boom, later you're told your sister is gone.
I mean, there were a lot of people who were speculating that there was maybe some sort of foul play involved. Yeah.
In terms how was the body found also? Because
We tried to establish that, but then the EMS said, can we please respect the family?
I mean, if you know, in instances when the EMS says, can you respect the family, it's not really a good sign, it's not really a good sign. It probably means that the body was probably burnt.
But then, again, the family is not blaming the boyfriend, although we heard that they had a fight last week. They're saying the guy is also going through a lot. So strength to him, strength to everyone who lost their belongings. Actually, people are as South Africans, we have people with good heart because I've been checking the tweets on my tweets. I've been checking the comments and people are asking, how can we help?
Oh, wow, that's nice.
Where do we donate? So it shows that we have...
we're not that bad.
I did see one woman, I think, I was speaking to Jeanette about it, and Jeanette is like, there was this woman who said that she was even hoping to even move out of the building, but she was like buying things for the new, for her new apartment, and she was saving those things and putting them. So now she has to start from the beginning, even when she moves. It's very, very
and
sad.
And actually, what's sad is, most people who lost their belongings, or most people who live there, are our age group from 20 to 25, a working group. We just got a new job. I mean, there's this lady who broke my heart when we got there. This lady, she's from KZN, and she just got an internship. Was sitting like right at the gate, hoping that they can say, okay, enter. Try to get anything
some of your things.
She's saying she broke her leg, but that does not matter at the point because she just want to grab the little that she can get, if possible.
And it's a very sad situation, guys.
It's very sad.
Because you hear about these type of fires in Busoweto,
informal
settlements.
So when now you hear about a fire this big in Midrand,
and honestly, so we are young, you want to buy that Spaza big TV.
Exactly. And now
it's just a mess, guys. Yeah. But we hopefully the family gets all the closure they need. And also, I want to say good luck to the police, because we do know these type of investigations can take a while for them to complete.
Yes.
But while we're at it, you know what? Also, something else that is also sad, guys. Yo, the Department of Education is going through the most.
Yeah.
So, Miss Siviwe, the education minister, was speaking about the budget cuts, I think, in Pretoria this past week. And she was just basically saying that there is not enough money to go around. The department is so broke.
Every department is broke.
Every department is broke, but
then our budget speech is always like out of this place.
Not like what?
That's funny actually. The budget speech is always so wonderful and so exaggerated, but when in reality it's not. I mean, the minister says a projected 118 billion will be needed by 2027 to just mitigate the risk of fewer teachers, reduced school nutrition programs, and scholar transportation.
We have committed ourselves to doing everything we can to stabilize the system, and have appealed to provinces to retain the basket of posts that they currently have in order for us to not affect the frontline services or compromise the education outcomes that we desperately want to improve. Provincial education departments will, in the next 2 to 3 years, find it increasingly difficult to fund their existing basket of posts and existing programs within their available budget, unless we take measures to proactively mitigate this risk.
And I feel like scholar transportation is very important, especially in our country, guys.
True.
Like, you have rural areas where they have to actually have that bus there for those students. Because without it, they won't be able to go to school. School is far. It's very, very far. They can't go there. And then you also have the school nutrition programs, guys. The amount of times I would hear about kids who do not have food at home and rely on the school food. It's very tough. Because you even hear about how some of the principals would be having to say that, no, there's no water at school, and we are forced to close the school down, but we know that these kids, they don't have food at home. So I'm literally, so I was actually watching this one documentary I think it was a foundation that was just asking for people to keep donating. And this principal was like, I had to turn away these kids, knowing very well that they don't have food at home. But there's no water in the school. What can I do? And it's so hurtful. It's so painful.
It is. Because I also remember when we were writing exams, you know, you write and go. But our principal would actually say, no, you will go after 12 so that everyone else is able to eat. And we don't separate those kids that can't afford. Exactly. So we don't see, it's okay, those that are remaining are the ones that need food. So in that way, we could see that this meal from the school is actually important. And now that they want to cut
need to cut budgets.
It's very sad.
It's very, very sad. I mean, you also have MEC Mantumi Chulani was, I think even last week, he was also saying that they will try by all means to not cut the teachers. Because apparently he says they need to secure over 3,000 public school teacher jobs. And if they don't do that, then it's chai. I mean, Western Cape is already saying that they're going to cut people off.
Like in 2025 already, they're cutting
people off. So like, what is going on, guys? Because it seems as if the Department of Education, over the past few years, it has been very, very bad. It has been deteriorating on a massive scale since the time of Angie Motshekgi.
I'm defending our Minister of Defense. But guys, it's actually sad when you realize in a democratic state you still have people who walk an hour or 30 minutes to school. And walk back. And it's quite sad when you realize some people, the last or the first meal they have for the day, it's at school. Mm-hmm. It's quite sad, the state which other people are living in. Now I'm actually disappointed because, I mean, we pay in tax. When you buy cigarette, you pay tax. They tell you sin tax. Everything that has tax. But then it seems like it's not materializing. But it's not giving anything in the outcome. So I don't know. Even when you check the health system, they will tell you we owe contractors. And then when you go, sometimes they don't have medication because they cannot afford to buy medication. And then now it's affecting even school children. I mean, you are in grade 4. You're hoping to become this wonderful teacher.
And now your dream is gone.
Yeah, you hear that they are cutting teachers.
Which is also funny because I was speaking to Min and he was speaking about it earlier on that you literally hear how the department will always say, they are short-staffed. There's not enough teachers. And then now you hear, no, there's too many teachers. We need to cut them off.
And this thing, teachers, it's very, 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 very a topic of concern. I mean, you have other schools that in one class you have about 40 to 50 kids. And you're expecting a teacher to deliver 40 kids. I mean, your siblings, two siblings when they are there, you sometimes feel like, you know what?
It's too much. So now imagine 40. And then you wonder why the private sector in terms of education, why they tend to kind of, I would say, excel. Because they are able to.
And then we're like 15 in the class.
They're 15 in the class and they have one teacher. And that teacher can be able to give the students attention. But you go to a rural school, like you're saying, Hemen, 40 in the class and that one teacher is not even responsible for that one class. And
poor infrastructure. They don't have classes. They don't have anything.
They don't have textbooks. They don't have activities.
To school Monday to Monday.
To you study, you open you your book, rest, that's it. Like, we don't have sports, exactly.
There's nothing, guys. And I feel like it's the same conversation every single year.
Yeah.
The department is lacking in some sort of way, and it's not filling up the gap. And it's like when they try to patch up here, another hole just opens up. I mean, Osibio was saying that the number of pupils in school has increased by 292,000 in the last 5 years.
It's funny how these numbers always increase. But at the end, when you check metric, It does not tally with the school. So you wonder what is happening in the education system.
Because you'll hear it, because it's either there are students who are either dropping out, there's a situation at home that affects them, or there are students who are held back, or somehow, some way, the students just give up on school. And it's like, you have so many factors that come in, and the department, you hear the same speech over and over in when the ministers are talking. We need to look after our students, the children, the youth.
They like future. To say we need to invest, but I feel like our department, let me not say our department, but our government is investing on things that are not important.
Mm.
I was listening to the news on Tuesday. They said that they wanted to rename the Fenton Drive. How much will that cost?
I was also really, really annoyed about that one.
And like, we constantly want to use money on things that will not really benefit us as a country while we're facing so many challenges.
And again, to grab your topic about changing names, it's actually disgusting for government to change names while they have still portals.
Exactly.
I was reading the Chris Hani Life Cut Short. They're saying Chris Hani used to walk 2 hours to get to school. And in the post-apartheid state, in a democratic state, you still have people who actually died for that to say, give people better lives. But then it seems like our government has failed.
I think it's still failing, and it'll probably keep on failing as time goes on, guys. But speaking of failing, we have a city now that will possibly also go down that same route. So Silas Brink, guys, has been removed as Tshwane mayor through a motion of no confidence.
Voting on the motion, those who are for the motion, 120. Sorry, okay, let me finish. Those who are against the motion, 87. The abstainers is 1. Thank you very much. Thank you, councillors. Councillors, I'm not done. I'm not done, councillors, please. Please, councillors, thank you. We need to record, to put it on record, that there's only 1 abstainance. So we've got 1 abstainance. So thank you very much. Then the motion pass.
120 councillors voted for the motion that was brought forward by the ANC. They argued that Brink did not have the interests of servicing townships. They also accused him of misusing municipality funds. 87 councillors voted against the motion, while 1 person abstained. We all know who that 1 person is. But let's move on. So, Simon, you were on the ground speaking to politicians. One conversation you had was with ANC Regional Secretary George and and he confirmed that they were proceeding with the motion of no confidence against 20. Let's take a listen to that clip.
We want to ensure that issues that we have raised over the passage of time are attended to, and those issues can be better be resolved by a government of the African National Congress in the local state. But of course, we understand that we can't be able to do that alone, because we have not won the elections in 2021. We will need to obviously have a working relationship of some sort with the parties that are represented in council. Hence, the ANC speaks a bold of a government of local unity.
And who would be in that government of local unity?
Well, there are parties that we have been working with for the longest period of time. Those are the preferences. And in terms of who else are we going to work with, the national will guide us, because in terms of the process, I mean, we are from a meeting last night till the late hours, where the ANC said this is the first phase. The first phase is that of ensuring that we proceed with the motion of of no confidence. And what happens in future is something that will be discussed again.
So, Herman, what sense were you feeling when you got there? I mean, what was the atmosphere like? I understand all the political parties came out in their numbers to show some sort of support towards their own agenda. So what was going on the ground?
You know, one thing I admire about Brink, it's his confidence, his ability to speak, articulate himself. I mean, he knew it was chai
it
for
was
him.
Chai, yeah.
Although he knew because they had a meeting prior yesterday with the ANC to say, hey Joe, we are in the GNU. Let's try to have the GNU in Tshwane. Let's see what happens. Let's negotiate. How much do you want, man? So I'm not allegedly. So this guy knew it failed, but he kept on saying, you know what? I'm going there to fight. He was busy saying Amandla and everything.
To fix things. And that is what we are. So men and women of the Democratic Alliance, of the FF Plus, of the ACDP, of the IFP, I want to say to you, the fight continues. Let's build a capital city that works for all of its people. Viva TA! Viva! Viva FF!
So yesterday it was quite dramatic because at first they asked for caucus break, 1 hour, to say actually, there are a few things that we need to iron out. We need some advices from our legal teams. And then when 1 hour got up, and then they asked for another 1 hour. And then speaker was like, no, your tricks won't work. Your tricks won't work. You're not going to delay the proceedings. So we're going to do it, and we're going to do it today. And you can see where the speaker wanted to do this because he also voted, something you hardly see happening. I mean, we have not seen Nosiviwe Ngakula.
Participating in voting.
And actually what he did yesterday, he wanted to sort of degrade Brink when he said, let's vote by the show of hands, because he knew the numbers were agreeing that this guy must go. And when we asked him, my guy, why did you vote? He said, no, it was the right thing to do. It needed to be done. And they are complaining about, they're saying the Eskom and Rainwater bill has been escalating since Brink came in. And then they're arguing that he's not servicing the townships, not providing services to the township. But on the other hand, it is quite funny to see a government that has been ruling for 18 months breaking off Action SA and DA. It was quite interesting to see.
Exactly, because they were, I'm not going to argue, I'm not going to say that it was the best relationship, but I think it was the ideal relationship for Tshwane compared to the other options that are out there, you understand?
Yeah. So, okay, I'm going to start with Herman Mashaba. Herman Mashaba, we asked him, hey, you've been working with these people. I know the relationship was quite toxic.
How?
So why is it even this relationship toxic? And then when they had to debate the motion to check if it can stay, it can be tabled or not, Action is a candidate. Councillor said, you know what, this guy is a failure, he failed to provide services to Hammanskraal, blah 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 blah. And the mayor came back. That's why I'm saying I like his spirit of fighting. And he said, no, actually we were in government together. So
we both failed. Which is not, I mean, like, it's not like bad, guys. And I must say, you know, I was reading a few tweets after the whole like him losing his mayorship, and somebody was like, mayors have come and gone, what's so special about him? There was another person who said, a city run by Action SA and ANC is a recipe for disaster. There was one person, I must say, this person was very blunt to stay to the point. He said, Herman Mashaba has joined into bed with the ANC and the EFF, proving that he is such a political prostitute, preferring the highest playing client, which was honestly, from my point of view, was very, like, it kind of irked me, because at the same time, it's not like he's, you know, jumping into bed. I think it's just thinking out, you don't wanna stay in a sinking ship.
Mm.
You definitely don't wanna stay in a sinking ship.
It was that case, because he said to us, you know what? I told them the DA who you're gonna finish what you started.
Mm.
So this thing happened, let's remember, it does not start here. It starts from the 29th of May.
Yes.
When we had a moonshot pact. We were ready to say goodbye to the ANC.
Yeah.
And now you're coming back, you're saying you're entering here. Wow, my sister.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was that thing. You know, okay, you betrayed us, I'm going to betray you as well.
Yeah. And I feel like it was expected at the end of the day, especially once you hear that your partner is having conversations with other people behind your back, which is it's very much expected that your partner goes...
But again, it shows how ANC is still in charge. We might not want to agree, but it's still in charge.
Mm.
I mean, with GNU, we knew the reports about Helen Zille wanting deputy for that guy.
Yeah.
And then it happened. Paul Mashatile received the position and he got a minister of agriculture, which is a crucial role, but then it's better than having him as a deputy.
And I mean, like you're saying, it's a very crucial role.
It is.
South Africa is a very farming industry.
So, and we know who's leading in that farming industry.
He definitely still has the kind of the upper hand.
Yeah.
So, but guys, what's funny?
As we know, the color...
Yes.
It's the color in farming.
Exactly. We know that.
We know.
Let's not touch on that.
Yeah.
So, okay, I'm not going to touch on that. But again, I was just trying to give you a picture of the power the ANC has.
It still has.
So,
I mean, we even saw it with the way, so sorry to kick Otanamulumu, but we even saw it with when the Premier Lucifer was trying to pick his
What happened is that, okay, they have like 75 seats, ne?
Mm.
And you need 108 seats to be in the majority. But then They pull DA to say, okay, what do you want?
Yeah.
Let's hear you. And then they also pulled Action SA to say, okay, what do you want?
As well.
So for them, it was not about losing. They were going to win. Rain or storm or whatever. They were winning.
But let's just hope for in their winning streak, they make sure Twane is up in arms. And
they actually do something.
It's about servicing the people.
But exactly.
Chickens... I'm gonna try his name.
Go
but
on.
Yeah, the secretary said it's not about positions. So hopefully, because I mean, within 14 days they should constitute a government, and we know it's gonna be about who's gonna be the mayor,
which position.
They don't pay more attention on that and neglect our people.
Because we do know in situations like this, the services and everything can fall apart very fast. But yeah, let's just hope Tony
and Tony was better than Jobbik. It's better than Jobbik.
I think Tony in when you compare it to Ekurhuleni in the John Jobbik,
it's better on scales.
And then we don't want it to deteriorate to that point.
Yeah.
So again, hopefully everything still stays on path. Going back again, guys, to the sadness of children in the country. Children, apparently, according to Stats SA, children are at a greater risk of being raped in Limpopo than anywhere else in the country. This is according to a report released by Stats SA on Thursday, which showed that in the 2022-2023 period, Limpopo recorded the highest proportion of rape cases amongst crime against children at 54%, followed by Mpumalanga with 47% and Gauteng with 35%.
And then KZN? No, it's just a matter of concern.
We're getting there. Relax. So they went on to basically just explain how although rape has, because apparently, according to the stats, the SAPS stats, rape has actually decreased against children, but it still remains a problem with amongst basically just crimes in general. But it also, they're saying that the report showed that the Western Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, and Gauteng ranked as the provinces with the highest reported crimes against children. Nandi and I were speaking when the report came out, and we were talking about how we were quite shocked that Western Cape is leading more than KwaZulu-Natal.
It's a very interesting one.
We're not shocked by Gauteng being on the list.
But then I think it's one of the conversations that we once had. So, remember we mentioned that African costumes. I'm not blaming them. I'm an African and I'm proud to be African. Yeah. But then at some point you are forced to marry at a young age.
Yeah, you're speaking about that.
You are raped while you don't know that you are raped.
True.
You are raped and then your family say, no, let's keep it under the carpet. So those kind of things. And it becomes a challenge for them to fall on the states because they are not there in the public domain or in SAPS documents. But I'm shocked that Limpopo is leading.
With rape cases,
yeah, because you'll think these things usually happens where there's more rural areas.
I mean, Limpopo is mostly, I think Limpopo still counts as a rural province. In itself, it's more rural than KwaZulu. I would beg to argue that Limpopo is more rural than KwaZulu-Natal.
No, guys, KwaZulu-Natal is Pietermaritzburg and Durban. That's
where's Limpopo? Limpopo is only Polokwane. Polokwane is not even a metropolitan city. It's Fanda not even recognized as a. It's not a. It's
but
not
we also have. We, like,
Fanda is nice.
No.
Fanda doesn't count.
I want to go there, but I'm scared of the heat.
No, but Heaven, if we want to definitely talk about rural areas, I think we need to put Limpopo higher than KwaZulu-Natal. KwaZulu-Natal has. You have to also look at the attraction that it also gets.
Yes.
It gets a lot of an attraction besides... Limpopo doesn't really have that many attractions. The only attraction it has is the mountains. And nobody really wants to also climb the mountains every year.
It's so hot.
You understand? So whereas... KwaZulu-Natal, you have the beaches. You have the fact that it has recognized metropolitan cities. But point is, you have all of these factors. You have all of these factors that are making it higher, more modern than it is rural. I understand, yes, you still have rural areas in KwaZulu-Natal, but Limpopo is still considered a rural province. I mean, when you look at farm provinces, you look at Northern Cape. That is the first farming province that you think of.
And you're quite right, Joe. So to not give an angry chance, you're quite right. Even the population, if you check, I think Limpopo is high in terms of population. The other provinces, yes, they are economically, but then they don't have
the population is not as big.
Yeah. And you have people coming from Zimbabwe
flooding through Limpopo, and that's why I get it. Kind of makes sense as well with the fact that the rape cases are much higher in Limpopo. Because the more you think about it, there's not a lot of. First of all, there's not a lot of police. I mean, we heard about it last week. Was it the National Commissioner who said himself that there's not a lot of police visibility on the ground? The National Commissioner, in Parliament, he was saying that they only have 153,000 personnel on the ground. And we also know that most of those numbers are in metropolitan areas. So when you move it to your Limpopo and your rural areas, the police stations are not that many. So, and then it also means that half of the time, and if we see that the rape cases in Limpopo are a lot, you can also then also look at the fact that Limpopo is actually reporting it's rape cases.
It's going to the police stations
no matter how far they are. Compared to your KwaZulu-Natal, KwaZulu-Natal is big, but the cases are small, which means that, like you were arguing,
most of the cases are not reported because
most of the time people are either afraid, people are either not willing to come forward, or family members are really just saying, don't report it. It's a family matter. We'll deal with it inside.
But okay. Gwena has just shined about Limpopo and reporting cases. What do you have to say about KZN?
Hey man. No, but I also, I do think that with KZN, I know that, I mean, Amazulu, we like to say, like, into yasekhaya siyayifihla ihlazo. And knowing exactly that it's something wrong, like it's wrong. It's so wrong. I have to agree with Gwena. Most of the cases remain unreported because umalume
says no.
And also the police probably know the family. Like, no, guys, let's not do it like this. Asifihleni, like, and it's.
And I think no matter how many campaigns that there can be out there, because I think as much as the government, you know, because I think, like, this is the part where I would say the government kind of plays like a part, because they do a lot of campaigns. They do a lot of GBV campaigns. They go to schools educating kids, this is and this and this. And I understand, Veleve, there are some schools where they don't go to. But I would like to think that the information is like out there a lot. But I think at the end of the day, it starts at home.
Yeah, it's,
and if
it's
at home, your family's telling you, don't speak.
Then what
keep
else
quiet.
Are you gonna do?
You can't really do much.
And sometimes it's even a older brother raping a younger sister. So to report that, they feel like, you know what?
It's shameful. Yeah, you don't want to report on your own brother.
And then think about your brother.
last thing. Did you know that former South African Defense Force soldier, whatever it is, I knew I childed, was sentenced to life
imprisonment for rape. But not only that, for also infecting his partner with HIV. I mean, what nonsense is that, guys?
But anyway, honestly, I'm lying.
That is but I must say, actually, women have been winning in court cases this week, and we are all for it. But yeah, guys, that's all for this week's News Wrap. Remember that you can find out our latest podcast, review, and subscribe for free on Iono FM, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you choose to get your podcasts. You can also find us or follow us on all social media platforms at Sowetan Live. This podcast is a Times Live production, and our producer is Demi Buzo, who came back from leave, guys. We're actually very much happy to
Hey!
Don't forget, you can also have a listen to our other podcasts: Sunday Times Politics Weekly, Taking the Rams by the Horn, Business Day Spotlight, Gogo, Have I Been Scammed, and 30 Years of Democracy. Thank you for tuning in, guys. Join us again next week for more updates on the biggest stories from me, Gwena, and my colleagues Nandi and Herman.
Till next time.
Bye.